Hey, it's Amelia, aka Big Tit.
And I'm Natasha, aka Little Tit.
And together, we're the Graveyard Girls. Hello.
Hello. It's a joint case.
Yeah, I was going to say a normal one.
It is a normal one.
We call them normal ones.
Because it's not Patreon.
Yeah.
Because it helps us distinguish what episode we're doing.
Yeah.
So it's a joint one, and it's one that you've suggested.
Yeah. Basically, I was watching different documentaries, and then there was things about bad policemen. I'm not including that bad policeman in this episode.
Okay.
I'm doing a different one, but it made me think, and I was like, oh, that'd be a good joint case to do of like bad cops or cops gone wrong, or maybe they got into the job so that they could commit crimes. Ooh. I don't know, that's always a theory with some of them, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just thought it'd be quite an interesting one to go about.
Well, yeah, because you think police officers are supposed to uphold the law, and sometimes they do not.
Yes. Not obviously, we're not throwing all policemen or police ladies under the bus, because most of them are good and do their job properly. But as we already know from history, there's also some corrupt ones.
Mm-hmm.
So we've picked one each.
Yes.
I don't know if you want to go first.
I could do. Mine's a bit more modern because I was just like, I don't know who to go with. So okay. I was looking through not just police officers, but also lawmakers. But then I was just like, I don't like any of the lawmakers. So I just stuck to police officers.
Okay, no, that's fine.
Because it was all corruption.
Mine's a little, as much as I picked bad policemen, mine's a little bit outside the box. So I was naughty. I didn't follow my own rules. But I've managed to tie it back in. And that's why I'm interested to see who you pick first. So.
Okay. So I went for one that is speculated to be the inspiration for the character Dexter from the show with the same name.
Oh, okay.
But that's not confirmed. So Manuel Pardo Jr., also known as Manny, was born in New York. And his childhood, he was a Boy Scout. And usually with that type, the connotation of that is like, they're a good person.
Okay.
They're a Boy Scout. They're a good boy.
Yeah.
So we don't know. He later joined the Marine Corps. And in the 1970s, he began his law enforcement career as he graduated at the top of his class and became a highway patrol officer.
Okay.
I'm not sure whereabouts in Florida, but he was a highway patrol. And in 1979, he was fired for falsifying tickets.
Oh, okay.
So it begins. He was soon hired by another police department in the Miami-Dade County. I mean, there should really be some background checks.
Yeah.
I was just like, okay. So he was fired from this department as well. But I'm not too sure what got him fired this time.
Okay.
It is stated that he lied to investigators, but I'm not sure what about.
Okay.
Okay.
So they might have deemed it minor at the time.
Yes. So after being fired, he somehow became involved with drugs.
Right. In terms of taking them or distributing them?
Taking them, but in the trading of drugs.
Okay.
But he kind of looks like he did some drugs.
Okay. I mean, quite possible. Maybe. I think that happens to a lot of drug sellers anyway. I think a lot of them end up taking them themselves.
Yeah. So again, something went wrong. As in January 1986, during a robbery, he killed Mario Amador and Roberto Alonso. I think he was robbing them.
Right, okay.
I think this was a drug deal gone bad.
Oh, okay.
I think. I'm not too sure. It's very not so clear of like what actually happens, but it's very lots of robberies involving him. Later that same month, he killed Michael Milot, who Manny believed was a police informant. This isn't confirmed.
Okay.
Michael had provided Manny with gun silencers, so this is how they knew each other. An associate of Manny, Rolando Garcia, lured Michael to Manny's wife's car with Manny on the back seat. I don't know if this was like a proposition. It's like, yeah, you can. But once he sat in the passenger seat, he was shot in the head. The car was cleaned, but also reupholstered, so there was like no evidence.
Yeah, and he'd have that background from being in the police before. He'd know exactly what they're going to be looking for.
Yeah, I mean, maybe should do some background checks on some people. Only a month later, in February of that year, he robbed another couple in their own home, and he ended up killing Luis Robledo and Ulpiano Lido.
Okay.
They're very Hispanic names, and I'm not sure if I pronounced them right. I'm sorry. He seemed not to kill again until March of that... Oh, sorry. He didn't kill anyone in March of that year. But in April, I'm thinking he was not of sound mind as he believed he was marked for death by Farah Quintero.
Oh.
After she drew numbers of 8 on a piece of paper. And in a Cuban religion, 8 is the numerical symbol for death.
Oh, so is it like with pirates with the black... Is it black dot or black hand, whatever it is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like just drawing 8 on a piece of paper. He was just like, she's going to kill me. So he killed Farah along with Sarah Musa because he thought
he was going to... That's who was coming. Yeah.
After failing to show up for multiple drug deals, he killed what is believed to be his final victims. Ramon Alvaro and his girlfriend Daisy Ricard were both shot, but the gun jammed when killing Daisy.
Oh.
So he ended up bludgeoning her with the gun.
Bloody hell.
This action then set off the gun, which then shot Manny in the foot.
Ooh.
Mm. He somehow escaped to New York, and while in hospital, the bullet from his foot was connected to these final murders, and he was caught. I was just like, okay.
So he should have attempted to remove that himself, and he might not have got caught then.
It's weird that he ended up in New York.
But I think if he'd gone to hospital, he was probably thinking if he'd gone to hospital in that area, they would have linked it. Whereas if he goes away, they might not put two and two together.
Yeah, I don't know, like, from the killing to the hospital when he was apprehended. I'm not sure the time scale, but I'm assuming
because he would have thought that it would be easier for him to put it together if it's all the same county.
Manny said that it was his mission to rid Florida of its drug culture by killing active sellers and buyers of drugs, admitting to at least 6 of 9 murders.
Okay.
During his trial...
But he doesn't want to free him with murderers.
Sorry. That's what I'm saying. During his trial, Manny took the witness stand in his own defense. He claimed, "I am a soldier. I accomplished my mission. I humbly ask you to give me the glory of ending my life and not sending me to spend the rest of my days in state prison."
Oh, well, I hope they give him life in prison rather than a death penalty.
He acknowledged that he killed all 9 victims, but claimed that all 9 victims were drug dealers who had no right to live and that he was doing society a favor.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's really deluded by this point.
Mm. After 26 years on death row, he was executed in Florida on December 11th, 2012, by lethal injection.
Okay.
Do you want to see him?
Yes.
Okay. It's a very...
I have an image in my head. I'm thinking he looks quite Hispanic as well.
Yeah. I mean, his name is...
I'm thinking... I don't know if I'm just... Because I'm thinking of, like, Mexican, like, and, like, drug cartels.
He's very scary looking.
Is he, like, really, like, tattooed? As well.
No.
Not that tattoos make people scary, but...
No. He's just...
Oh, yeah, he's got scary eyes.
Yeah.
He does look like he does drugs. Yeah. I can't really say anything because I have really big piercing eyes, but...
Yeah, but you're like, you don't have soulless eyes.
He looks like... You know when they do a reconstruction for the police, but out of like the wax?
Yes.
That's what he looks like.
That's what he does look like.
You know when they've had a dead body and they can't like establish the hair and stuff, so they just do like a wax work...
Yeah.
Remake of the skull. That's what he looks like. It doesn't look like real eyes. It looks like fake eyes.
They do look fake eyes. I know what you mean. He was 56 when he died. But yeah, I don't like that face at all.
Yeah, no, that's scary.
That's why I chose it. I was just like...
I thought he was going to have really... I mean, he might have had dark hair at one point. He's just shaved it all off. But...
Let's see.
I thought he was going to have like quite thick, dark black hair. Maybe some... face tattoos. That's what I had in my head. Maybe a piercing. I don't know why. That's what I thought in my head.
Oh, you're going to be annoyed. Their trending searches on Google is aliens. I'm trying to find a different photo of him, but aliens is the No, they're all the same.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's just like slightly different. He's just older.
He just looks really tanned there.
Yeah.
He kind of looks dead.
He does look dead.
We'll have to include this for the Instagram post so people know what we're talking about.
But yeah, when I saw that, I was just like, I have to do that.
I think there's a way to do it on TikTok as well. You can do the little picture in the corner. I'll have to figure it out.
And be like, ooh, that's...
There is a way to do it. There is. I've seen other people do it. I haven't figured it out.
Is it like green screen?
I don't know. I'll have to Google it
This
episode.
We're very good at not... technology, because we were discussing threads earlier. We were like, how do threads work?
Well, does it, considering we're of a age where we're supposed to be good with social media and technology. Like, I'm really shit.
I mean, we do it.
I hate it when
the algorithm
asks me, and they always go, "Yeah, but you've grown up with technology, so you know how to do it." I'm like, "No, no, I fucking don't."
It's just the algorithm is the thing that fucks us up.
Yeah, yeah. I can't get past that, and it really pisses me off because I'm trying very, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
So, thanks for everyone that's already been listening, and if you could share us with all your friends, because apparently social media doesn't want to do it for us. Despite the fact I spent a ridiculous amount of hours trying to get new followers, if you could share it, I'd be very, very grateful.
Yes. And comment and subscribe and rate us wherever you listen. That would be helpful. Yeah. Thank
Sharing's
you.
Sharing's caring.
We're in a very off mood today.
Yeah,
that's why we're very...
I just feel a bit frustrated.
Yeah. Oh, frustrated and upset.
Yes. And it's definitely not coming out in this episode.
I know, that's why I was just like, I just read my thing like...
Okay. Well,
I just kept to the script.
Yeah. Okay. Well, as I said, I have gone a little bit outside the box for this one. Now, this is a serial killer, and he was a wartime reserve police officer when he kills his first victim. So technically a police officer. Most of the rest of his crimes weren't committed whilst he was a serving police officer. However, by the end of this case, I do wonder if the fact he was allowed to serve in the reserve wartime police, if that actually had an impact on his crimes, whether it maybe allowed him to get away with it. So even though he wasn't a police officer the whole time.
Okay.
If it had an impact. You'll know what I mean as I get into it.
Okay.
Okay. So I am going to tell you about John Reginald Halliday Christie. Long name. Known by his friends and family is Reg Christie. So I'm going to refer to him as Reg.
You his friend?
Yeah, I'm his friend.
Okay.
He was an English serial killer active during the 1940s and early 1950s. I don't know if you've heard of him before.
No.
Some people might have heard. He is apparently very well known. I roughly recognise the name, but didn't know exactly what he'd done.
Okay.
So, he wasn't a total surprise to me. But yeah, I think there's been, as I've done research, there's been lots of things sort of offshots mentioned about him, so there's a chance some of our listeners know who he is.
Okay.
He would go on to murder at least 8 people, including his own wife.
Oh.
Yeah. His preferred method of murder would be strangulation, though he did use other methods, and he would eventually be caught and hanged in 1953.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there's a fair bit to this case, and when I say like, I mean a ridiculous man. I didn't realise just how much until I started writing it, so I'm trying to condense it as much as I can, as I'm very conscious of the fact that this is a joint case, so I've done my best.
Okay.
So two of Reg's victims were Beryl Evans and her baby daughter Geraldine. This case of this double murder sparked a lot of controversy at the time, as Beryl's wife, Timothy Evans, would be charged with the murders and convicted for his daughter's death, and he would subsequently be hanged for that crime. Obviously, we now know he was innocent. So this is where the whole thing sort of eventually opens up.
Mm-hmm.
Reg would obviously then be caught 3 years after Timothy had been hung, and it would only be then that they sort of uncovered all the other murders.
Okay.
So Timothy would eventually be, what's the word...
pardoned after death
for his crimes, but it took a long time.
Exonerated,
that's the word I was looking for. I knew it started with something like that. I was going to say an X,
pardoned.
But
kind of exonerated.
So he does eventually get proven, but by this point it's a bit late because he's already been hung, so you know, a bit shitty for Timothy. Okay, so it also then opened up the fact that some of his victims were killed after Beryl and Geraldine. So if Reg had been caught in time, then maybe these other victims wouldn't have died.
Yeah.
Okay. So obviously it always gets very messy and is very important. And it's a big case that's referred to in law, basically. Mm. Okay. So who was our serial killer? Well, Reg was born in Yorkshire and he was the 6th of 7 children. He apparently had a troubled relationship with his dad, who is said to be harsh towards all of his children, punishing them over trivial things, and he showed very little emotion towards them. So, depending on how you want to look at it, but some people do suggest if they've had a troubled upbringing, it might have an impact on them in later life. It was also said that Reg was bullied by his mother and older sisters, but also weirdly his mother coddled him as well. So it was a weird, like, I feel like she probably bullied him at times, but then was also smothered him with love other times. I feel like it was probably very confusing for him growing up, and I wonder if that affected him in
probably
some way. I suppose it would have been very confusing for him as a child.
Hmm.
So at the age of 11, he won a scholarship to Halifax Secondary School, where he excelled in maths, history and woodwork. He sang in the choir, and after leaving school in 1913, he entered employment as an assistant projectionist.
Hmm.
Okay. So he did very well in school, obviously very intelligent, and some have said after he was arrested, they obviously do a different psychological test. Apparently had a very high IQ.
Okay.
So That
usually is the case with killers, isn't it?
So he kind of had it all going for him, even though emotionally he would have had a difficult childhood. I think he had the potential to do very well for himself.
Mm.
So I also get the impression that he would have been bullied a lot in school and by peers at work.
Mm-hmm.
Because after he was arrested, he was described by childhood peers as a queer lad who kept himself to himself and was not very popular. He also reportedly had issues with impotence that began as soon as he'd hit puberty, and apparently his first attempts at sex were failures, and peers branded him Reggie No Dick and Can't Do It Christy.
Oh.
So, yeah, I feel like he was quite heavily bullied.
Yeah.
Which in adolescent years I feel might have shaped him.
Yeah.
Because, well, let's be honest, no one likes being bullied anyway, but I feel like they were particularly harsh.
Yeah.
Names.
I think kids can be so cruel that they don't realise what they're saying can have effects lasting and could maybe contribute to certain behaviours later on.
I don't want to say I feel sorry for him, because he goes on to kill people, but also I can sympathise with him a little bit.
Yeah.
Because he clearly not had it easy.
Yeah.
Apparently the impotence would remain all throughout his adulthood, and he could only perform with prostitutes. Now this will be interesting, because some of his victims go on to be prostitutes. A post-mortem done after his hanging said that there was nothing abnormal about his genitals. So that then threw up for me, I wondered if he was gay. And it's not a case of he was impotent, he just wasn't psychological, attractive. Yeah.
Maybe.
So, possibly.
Maybe.
And then whatever it was that the prostitutes were willing to do was something that he got off on. That's what I was instantly thinking in my head.
Mm.
Okay. So by September 1916, during the First World War, Reg enlisted in the army. He was called up on the 12th of April 1917 and joined the 52nd Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire Regiment. He served as an infantryman, but also was called upon to work as a signalman.
Mm.
The following June, he would be injured in a mustard gas attack, spending a month in hospital. Now, Reg claimed lots of things, including the fact that it left him blind and mute. But as we now know, they wouldn't have allowed him to go back into the army if that was the case. And when he had later psychological testing done and evaluations after his arrest many years later, they said this was probably due to the fact that he had an underlying personality disorder that caused him to exaggerate or feign illness as a ploy to get sympathy and attention. So that would kind of explain that.
Mm-hmm.
He would be demobilised from the army in October 1919. Fast forward to 1920, and Reg is marrying Ethel Simpson from Bradford. Their marriage wasn't a happy one, and Ethel had suffered a miscarriage early on in their marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And after this, Reg had continued to meet prostitutes for sex. So I don't know if that's because she was having a miscarriage, or if she was just having a miscarriage, like she felt a bit unwell. And obviously, I think because he's maybe struggling sexually, he's either not attracted to her or he's just not getting in there. So he's wandering off to prostitutes, which if Ethel knew about, I feel like that would have also upset her.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's not brilliant. And after 4 years of marriage, they would separate. Ethel would move with her siblings down to Sheffield, and Reg would move to London. And this is where things would take a turn for him, as he would now be spending the next 10 years in and out of prison.
Okay.
In 1934, however, after Reg did a stint in prison and was released, he reunited with Ethel and moved to 10 Willington Place. Now, I'm going to briefly discuss some of the crimes that he committed in that 10-year period. So the first one was in 1921, and he was working as a postman, for which he was convicted of stealing postal orders, and he received 3 months in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking that's obviously some of them would have had money in and things like that. So he was dealing maybe. That. But I also feel like he's not long split up with Ethel, so I'm wondering if he's struggling financially.
Yeah.
And he's done this as a way to see what he can survive. Get, yeah. So then on the 15th of January 1923, he was convicted of obtaining money on false pretenses and a violent conduct. He was bound over, so that's a bit like given a fine,
mm-hmm.
and put on probation for 12 months, so didn't serve any prison time. He committed 2 crimes of larceny in 1924 and received consecutive sentences, one of 3 months and another of 6. Then he took work as a lorry driver, and in May 1929, he would be convicted of assaulting Maud Cole. He was then sentenced to 6 months hard labour.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then in 1933, he was re-imprisoned due to auto theft. So it's a real varying...
Just that crime.
Yeah, it is petty crime, yeah. apart from the Maud one, where that seems yeah. a bit more extreme. But the fact he was only given 6 months hard labour, not that it was only a little assault, because assault is assault and it's still bad.
Yep.
But I wonder if... he wasn't that seriously injured, the victim.
Mm. Maybe if... not. It was maybe just a little assault. Yeah. I know it's like assault, but...
So it's like a gradual increase in what he's doing. He started from petty theft and he's gradually increasing to more and more drastic things. But you see that a lot with other criminals. And I sort of wondered if this is where it's going all a bit downhill for him.
Mm-hmm.
So... he then obviously, that last one was in 1933, then he obviously gets back with Ethel in 1934 and seems to end his life of petty crime because there's no more records of him ever committing another petty crime. Or he just doesn't get caught. So I then thought, was maybe Ethel keeping him on the straight and narrow?
Maybe.
So in 1937, so after 3 years of being back together, the couple would then move to 10 Rillington Place in Notting Hill, which is in London. It's a rundown area of London, and I believed that they lived on the ground floor flat of a terraced house. So it's in those days, you know, where the terrace, there's still 3 floors, technically, and each one would have been a flat.
Yep.
So all multi-occupancy. So by this point, Reg had now managed to get a job as a foreman in a cinema. But at the beginning of the Second World War, he applied to join the police and was accepted. So this is the War Reserve Police. So mm-hmm. he didn't go away and serve anywhere. He would have stayed behind because there's still crimes being committed. So they still need a police service.
So they knew all of his...
No, they didn't. They didn't do a background check, which is why I was interested to see who you had mentioned, because I do wonder if this might have had an impact.
It's like, maybe do some background checks on mm-hmm. people you are employing the to only enforce thing the law.
I will say in the defence of the authorities at this point of time is, it's the beginning of the Second World War. So were they slightly more worried about other things that they didn't necessarily do all the proper checks? Was everything just a bit hurried through?
Yes.
I'm not going to say it's right, because they should have done checks, and if they had done checks, they would have realised he'd been put in prison not just once, but 10 times. Multiple times over 10 years. So, they might have not hired him for the reserve police, but it's fine. Obviously, he did end up, even though he's put in reserve, he was called upon for the reserve police. And he was assigned to Harrow Road Police Station, and that there he met a lady by the name of Gladys Jones. They began an affair which lasted well into 1943. So I think the war started in 1939.
Mm-hmm.
So good 4 years. That was until her husband, who was a serving soldier, returned.
Yep.
He obviously heard of the affair and went straight to the house to where his wife had been living, only to find Reg there and assaulted him. Okay.
Yep.
I'm kind of with the husband on this one. I'd be a bit pissed off as well. Okay. So it would be in this next 10 years that Reg commits a number of murders. Okay, so things are really heating up. So his first victim was a 21-year-old lady by the name of Ruth Fuhr. I think it's Fuhrist, because she's an Austrian munitions worker. So it kind of spelled a bit like forest, but it's a U instead. So it's like Fuhrist.
Maybe? I'm not good with
names.
Because
it's not Germanic, because she's Austrian.
Yeah.
But it's
kind of that.
Similar. Yeah.
Maybe.
I'm going to go with Fuhrist.
Fuhrist. Okay.
So she was an Austrian musicians worker who supplemented her income with prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's obviously how she's going to meet Reg. According to Reg's statement, he invited her to his home to engage in sex while his wife was away visiting relatives. He said afterwards that he'd impulsively strangled her on his bed with a length of rope. He initially stored her body in under floorboards in their living room and then buried her in the back garden the following evening. Okay?
Okay.
Now, I'm not sure why, but soon after this, he decides to resign from the police. So, I don't know. I want to know why, and I couldn't find out why, because in my head, I'm thinking surely it would have been easier for him to remain as a police officer because he could have kept an eye on the case. And I'm guessing she didn't have family there, so no one would have necessarily reported her missing. But if he was in the police service and a missing persons report came in, it would be easy for him to hide it.
Yeah.
So I don't know why he decided to resign, and I couldn't find out.
Unless he maybe felt some guilt.
I don't know as though it was that.
He's like, I'm a police officer now.
I wondered in my head if there was a possibility he was also up to other things that he shouldn't be up to in the police station, and he was worried about being uncovered, so he resigned before they could do an investigation. Yeah. But I have no proof of that, so maybe. It's just a theory in my head.
Yeah, maybe.
Because it just seems a bit strange to me that he would just suddenly resign.
Huh.
Okay. So the second murders would be in 1944, and he'd found work as a clerk by this point and in a radio factory. And this is where he met his second victim. And this was Muriel Amelia Eady. So there's an Amelia in it. So, although it's only a middle name. He invited her back to his place on the pretense that he had a special mixture that would help cure the symptoms of her bronchitis.
Yes, I know what kind of mixture you're on about.
Okay. So, yeah, I think he was very good at telling a tale.
Yeah.
And persuading women to come back with him, okay? She would have to inhale a mixture from a jar with a tube inserted in the top. This mixture was in fact Friar's Balsam, which was like a resin in ethanol.
Yeah.
And he would have done this to disguise the smell of domestic gas, or as we now call it, coal gas, which had a high percentage of carbon monoxide in it.
Mm-hmm.
That could then render her unconscious. He then raped her and buried her body alongside Ruth's. So I'm guessing he was going with the whole jar thing of like, it's almost like a steam thing, like it's a balsam, it'll make you inhale this, it'll make you feel better. But the reality is was it was going to give her carbon monoxide poisoning and then he could rape her and kill her.
Not a great man.
No. And he's sort of evolving his methods of luring women. It's
also weird that he can rape an unconscious woman.
But that's why it makes me think maybe there's something in particular that he's into that he maybe couldn't persuade a conscious woman to go along with.
Can you play dead? And I'll just...
Well, I'm thinking of certain kinks that people have.
Yeah.
One, other prostitutes might be cool with it because, let's be honest, they're doing it as a job and if they need the money, they might be a bit more willing to let you do whatever. But, or in this case, if she's unconscious, she can't really put up a fight, so, you know, he can do whatever he wants. I wonder if he's got a bit of a kink, but obviously in these times...
What kind?
Well, there's lots of things, isn't
I know,
there?
But...
No, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah, we've got to think of that day and age, not now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and it's not like he would have... People still had all of these kinks that we have nowadays, they just weren't very vocal about it, because, you know, you can't talk about sex. So, do you know what I mean? I feel like this is maybe where it's gone along and then it just goes a bit too far.
Maybe.
And then he gets a taste for murder.
Maybe.
Okay. So now is about to be the third and the fourth murders. And during the Easter of 1948, so there's kind of a gap of nearly 4 years, Timothy Evans, along with his wife Beryl, moved into the top floor flat of Rillington Place and Beryl gave birth to Geraldine later on in the October of that year. In late 1949, Timothy informed police that his wife was deceased. A police search, obviously, was then conducted, but they failed to find the body. A second search was conducted, which revealed the body of Beryl and Geraldine and a 16-week-old male fetus in the outdoor wash house. So Beryl was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
The post-mortem revealed that both Beryl and Geraldine had been strangled and that Beryl had been physically assaulted and that she had facial bruising. Timothy's first claim was that Reg had killed his wife in a botched abortion operation, but police questioning later produced a confession out of Timothy.
Okay, so they might have tortured him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or at least, like, got a false confession out of him. From what I can work out, people were saying as well he wasn't... I suppose the polite way of putting it is a bit slow, but in those days they referred to him as being retarded.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was maybe quite easy to elicit a confession out of him. Also, they had no suspicions of Reg at this point, and it was very hard for them to believe that they would have two murderers. They came up, and then Timothy would then go on to withdraw his confession, saying that Reg had killed the pair, and that the only reason that Timothy knew about it was Reg had asked to help him move the bodies. Timothy had obviously done that, but then felt guilty, and that's why he rang the police to saying his wife was deceased.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I see.
So, obviously, the police are thinking, well, he's just using that as an excuse.
Hmm.
There's varying reports, but some say that Tim didn't know at this point that Geraldine was actually dead.
Hmm.
He hadn't realised that Reg had obviously killed her. But it all got very confusing in the trial, and eventually they would only try Timothy for the death of his daughter because there was either not enough evidence or it was all just confusing with the wife, and I don't think they could...
Okay.
I think he admitted moving the body. It was all a bit hit and miss. It got very messy, basically, which is why I've tried not to go too much into it. Okay. Also during the trial, this is an interesting part of Timothy's trial, Reg gave evidence against Timothy for the prosecution. So to me, it's like the police were dead set on Timothy being the murderer,
mm-hmm.
And that Timothy was just trying to frame Reg, when in fact, obviously, it was the other way around. Do we want to believe it was a botched abortion that ultimately ended in a strangling her? I'm not convinced. Because I wonder if that's the story that Reg could have told Timothy, and that's why then Timothy then used that as the story for the police. Yeah. I think Reg could have used that as a story to tell Timothy as to what happened, but I'm not convinced that that is what actually happened. I think Reg maybe wanted to have sex with her, strangled her, killed her, and then had to kill Geraldine because even though she was only a young toddler, she would bring to the attention that her mother was missing.
Mm.
And even though she probably wasn't speaking very much because she would have still only been a small toddler, she could have maybe said, like, he did it or something. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Not that they're necessarily going to believe the child, but she's effectively...
She a could witness.
Ruin, yeah, yeah, she's a witness and she could ruin it. So he's kind of got to kill her too.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And the fact that she was also strangled like the mum, and we already know that's his signature. MO. Yeah, yeah. It kind of makes sense to me that he would kill the pair of them.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we already know Timothy's been put on trial and he would be pursued for the second charge of murdering his child, not his wife. And I want to say that that was due to a lack of evidence that mm-hmm. they received.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's during the investigation of Beryl and Geraldine's deaths that the police massively fucked up and missed the opportunity to convict Reg. Now, obviously, searches were done of the whole property, and the wash house being in the very same garden that the first two victims were buried in. Some accounts say that a femur had surfaced and was used to prop up a fence. How they didn't see that as a sign that there might be more bodies buried in the thing, I'm not too sure. They like just didn't really seem bothered by that femur propping up a fence post.
Unless they thought it was like a tree root.
There's a bit of a difference between a femur and a tree root.
I know. I'm just trying to... I don't know.
Now, the only other thing I could think of in this time, this is a burning question for me, is because he would served as a police officer, and that would have been in the record. Obviously, the police used him as a witness for them, so for the prosecution. I'm wondering, did they believe Reg because he'd previously been a serving police officer, and it's like, oh, he's one of our own?
Probably.
And I wonder if that's what aided him, that's why they didn't look at him. Because not only did they not want to consider that there was two murderers from the same property, but like it wouldn't be a serving police officer.
Mm.
And they hadn't unlocked all of his other petty crimes at that point because he'd been allowed to work in the police, and you wouldn't be allowed to work in the police if you'd had previous convictions.
Yeah.
So I think they saw Reg as like, not a victim, but that just Timothy was trying to use him as a scapegoat.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of picked him as this case, because I feel like it does have an importance.
Oh, yeah. Because it's like, he's one of ours. He would never commit a crime.
Exactly. Okay.
Long list.
Yeah. We have multiple reasons. So nearly 3 years passed after the Timothy Evans trial, and Reg was now had a job working as a clerk in the British Road Services. At the same time, new tenants had arrived in Rillington Place, filling the first and second floors. Most of these tenants were migrants from the West Indies, and unfortunately, Reg and his wife weren't very happy about this, so it would appear they were racist too. They made a lot of comments.
Of course.
Tensions grew between them all, which resulted in Ethel prosecuting one of the tenants for assault. So things are heating up. I feel like not only are they causing problems with the neighbours, but I also wonder if there's tensions within the marriage as well.
Mm.
Okay. So this is the next murder, and this would be the murder of his own wife, Ethel.
Oh.
Okay. He would strangle her in their own bed. He invented a number of stories to explain her sudden disappearance. He told her relatives that she'd developed severe arthritis and so that she could no longer write to them anymore, and it's also why she didn't physically see them anymore. Kind of a good story.
Mm.
But he then told the neighbours that she'd gone to visit family. Okay? So that kept people quiet for a little while. Obviously, that was in December 1952. Then, between January and March 1953, so literally just a month later, things are heating up and he's about to murder three further women. So I feel like murdering Ethel might have been the catalyst for just, I don't know, going on a rampage.
Probably.
Mm.
She was kind of keeping him sane.
Yeah. And now she's murdered. Well, you know, he's free to do what he wants.
Mm.
So these three women would be Kathleen Maloney, Rita Nelson and Hectorina McLennan. Kathleen was a prostitute from the area, and Rita was down from Belfast visiting her sister and was 6 months pregnant at the time. When he met Hectorina while she was living in London with her boyfriend. They'd all met in a cafe and got talking to Reg, who then allowed the couple to stay at Rillerton Place while they looked for their own accommodation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Reg would lure Hectorina into his flat when he saw that she was on her own. When her boyfriend came looking for her, Reg simply said that he hadn't seen her, and Reg appeared concerned at the time and even continued to help Alex, the boyfriend, look for her. So he was playing this whole, oh no, that's terrible, like, these are my friends, I've let them stay.
Yeah.
It's horrendous that his girlfriend's disappeared.
It's so terrible. I wonder where she is.
Yeah. So Reg would later confess that he'd killed all three women by using a modified version of a gassing technique that he'd previously used on Muriel.
Mm-hmm.
He used a rubber tube connected to the gas pipe between the kitchen, which he kept closed off with a bulldog clip. He would then seat his victims in the kitchen, release the clip and let the gas leak into the room. This, of course, was disproved as it would have also made him unconscious.
Yeah.
Okay. So a later report concluded that he'd found a way to expose the victims to the carbon monoxide, maybe in a similar way as he had done to Muriel, and that the gas had made them drowsy. He would then strangle them with a piece of rope. He also raped all three, so mm-hmm. very similar to the earlier cases. He then wrapped the bodies in cloth and stowed the bodies away in a small alcove behind the kitchen wall. He later concealed the entrance to this alcove with wallpaper.
Okay.
Okay. So how were they uncovered? Well, on the 20th of
March... Someone put their hand through.
Not okay. Far off. So literally on the 20th of March in that same year, so literally like probably a week or two after he'd murdered them, Reg was forced to move out of his house after being caught fraudulently subletting his flat by the landlord. In the following days after Reg had moved out, the landlord had permitted one of the other tenants to use the ground floor flat's kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that tenant would be Beresford Bram. And on the 24th of March, Beresford uncovered the alcove when attempting to insert brackets into the wall to hold up a wireless set. Obviously, with no wall to drill into, it was just paper, Beresford peeled back the paper only to find the bodies. So, ooh. Not what you're expecting to find.
Hammer, is that?
Yeah, like, what is behind this paper? Then you start peeling. But even if you start peeling it, you're not expecting to find three bodies.
No. You're like, oh, extra space. Oh.
You're like, oh no. So obviously the police were called and a manhunt was set up to find Reg. After leaving Rillington Place, Reg had gone to Ralston House in King's Cross and booked a room for 7 nights using his real name and the Rillington address.
Mm.
He stayed only 4 nights, leaving on the 24th when news had broken of the discovery of the bodies. He then wandered around London sleeping rough. And on the 31st of March, he was arrested on the embankment near Putney Bridge after being challenged about his identity by a police officer who was Thomas Ledger.
Mm-hmm.
Reg tried to plead insanity, but that was obviously rejected. And he was hung on at 9 a.m. on the 15th of July 1953 by executioner Albert Pierpont, who I mentioned in our Patreon the other week.
Yes.
He would also be one of the final people that he executes.
Ah.
So on the scaffold, and I like this bit, probably shouldn't enjoy, but it does make me giggle. On the scaffold, Reg apparently complained that his nose itched, to which Albert replied, "It won't be bothering you for long."
It's true.
Very true. Very okay. True. So there was speculation of further murders, though none could be proven. And also, it seemed a bit far-fetched that he would then bury those other bodies somewhere else, because after these three were discovered, they ripped the house apart and found no more. So if he had,
where would he have put them?
Yeah, and he seemed so set on burying all those ones in the house, it seems a bit strange that he would bury the other somewhere else.
Yeah.
I don't know if people were just trying to jump on it, because there was a lot of unsolved murders at the time, so they were like, we might as well try and throw him in for those as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously kind of boo-booed his flip. I think he fled to that hotel because he's thinking, shit, I gave that address, and if it's in the newspapers that there's been deaths at 10 Rillerton Place, I best run. But I think that's also what led him to be caught, because he was trying to be sleeping rough and play the homeless person, and a police officer
got him caught.
Spotted him and thought, you seem a bit shifty, and questioned him a bit more, and yeah, ultimately it caught him up. So I obviously have a few questions. I wonder if not only was him, obviously he shouldn't have been allowed to be a reserve police officer,
no,
but I also wonder if there's, he didn't stop killing until he became
the police officer.
So I wonder if it either exposed him to something and they're maybe looking at other cases. I don't know as though he worked on any murders.
Yeah, because usually petty crime doesn't necessarily turn to murder.
And other than him being assaulted by that other man, I can't see anything that would suddenly trigger him into murdering. So I wonder if maybe being exposed to crime scenes, did it trigger something in his head?
Maybe.
So I think he would have eventually ended up murdering anyway, because of his personality, but it would have been something else that maybe triggered him off. So I'm wondering if the fact he had been allowed...
They sometimes say, like, brain injuries can, like, cause that? So maybe he was injured...
Oh, maybe.
...in the head.
And it just so happened he took a job as a police officer at the same time. Maybe. I don't know.
Don't know.
Could be interesting.
Don't know.
And obviously, also was the fact that he'd been a serving police officer, the fact that he was overlooked as a suspect so many times.
Probably.
I think so.
Probably.
So, yeah, like I said, he was a little bit outside the box.
Especially for that one that, like, he was there.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, poor Timothy got the blame for that one. Obviously, he was eventually exonerated, but a little bit too late.
Yes.
This
is why you don't put people to death.
But, yeah, at the same time, I think it was just easy to blame poor Timothy, wasn't it? He was, like, the perfect suspect. And I just think the fact that Reg had been allowed to be a police officer, I think it helped hide his crimes, even though weirdly he wasn't a police officer for all of the crime. So yeah, it was a little bit outside the box because he technically wasn't a serving police officer the whole time. And there is a lot of cases where obviously police officers have committed multiple crimes throughout the whole career. So yeah, I went a little bit outside the box with this one, kind of broke my own rules. But
I don't know, it was...
I think it had an impact. I do wonder if he hadn't served in the police, would he either have been caught earlier or would he have even started killing in the first place?
I don't know, it's very hard to tell, isn't it? He already was a criminal before he became a police officer.
But it's interesting that both of our cases, they seem to have overlooked the fact, like, they'd already were committing crimes before they were accepted into the police.
Especially in the 80s, you would have assumed they would have done a background check, especially in the same state.
Yeah. So it's like, in both of these cases, if they'd actually done background checks, would they have gone on to murder those people?
Probably not. Because he ended up with a weird god complex where he was ridding the Florida of all these people, but in turn, it gained another murderer. So it's like...
Yes, it's all right. He wanted to drug them of, free them of drug dealers, but not murderers. So, See, I think that'd be my excuse for murdering people, is like, I'm trying to get rid... I'd murder other murderers, and then... Then be like, well, I'm trying to get rid of the other murderers, so you've only got one.
I mean, that's it. Technically an executioner, is it not?
Yeah. Yeah, so technically it's my job.
Yeah, so... It's very...
It's a touchy subject.
Yeah.
But, I thought it was an interesting...
It was a good idea to do, rather than my favourites the other week, and you were like, I have no idea...
No, it was still a good idea. It was like, when you came up with the ideas, I was like, yeah, that's a brilliant idea. Then I came to sit down to write and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do it.
Neither did I. That's why I was just like...
I was like, Natasha, you should help me out here. Give me more information. But yeah, I was just randomly watching a documentary that mentioned a bad cop. And I was like, oh, that's a good idea for an episode.
So it was a good idea.
There we go. Hopefully everyone else agrees and hopefully they've enjoyed it.
Always do background checks.
Mm-hmm. That's what we're learning, I think. And... you know, even if someone's a serving police officer, if another person is claiming that that person committed a crime just because maybe they're a police officer, maybe have a little look at them.
Yeah.
So, I think that's it.
Yeah.
For today's episode.
I think it is.
So, in the meantime.
Keep creeping.
And we'll keep digging.